welcome to this edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast, where we talk about topics and resources that help you lead more to reach more. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. And welcome to another edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. I want to welcome you today. My name's Tom Bump, and I'm your host. And joining with me again is my co-host and co-creator of the KMC, Ron Brooks. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Hey, it's awesome today. I'm excited about this. This is a podcast where I'm fulfilling promises to the Kid Ministry Collective community as we've made a commitment that we're not going to shy away from the hard and difficult conversations. And this conversation is probably, it could be a two-parter, so we'll let you know. You may discover that it becomes two parts. We're going to record this and see how it goes. But this is a conversation that you may or you may not like. You may agree or not agree with everything. But I want to start the conversation, and I believe that we have a great resource to help us do that. But I believe that in the Kid Ministry Collective, we need to be having conversations about this topic because it's affecting so many people in and outside the church. And the church needs to know, how do we respond in a biblical way? And so today our guest is a good friend who's been a great source of information and help for me, good counsel. His name is Caleb Kaltenbach. Caleb's a pastor, speaker, author of several books, got a new book coming. I can't wait. I got to make sure I get on that launch team. I'm just saying, Caleb. I love his work. He's the founder of the Messy Grace Group and has a book entitled Messy Grace. And the new one is Messy Truth, which I think is pretty cool.
We'll have a messy family after that.
Yeah. Oh, we just got in. We got a scoop. All right. Awesome. There we go. So Caleb, welcome back. It's been a long time since I had you on the podcast, but welcome back to the KMC, man.
Man, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Right. We are super excited to have you on because we invited Caleb to come on because one of the things that we want to talk about today is how do we in the church navigate the discussion of gender dysphoria, children in transition, same-sex attraction. These are big and heavy issues, but we want to answer those questions of how does the Bible talk about it, and what can the church do to respond in a loving and grace-filled way. So Caleb is going to be our resource for that. So Caleb, if you could give us a little bit of a rundown on your story so that the leaders understand why, because they'll know real quick why we've asked you to join us on this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I was raised by three gay parents, two lesbians and a gay man who were activists. They were professors. My mother's partner was a psychologist. And I was raised in the LGBTQ community in Kansas City, home of the Super Bowl champs and the greatest quarterback ever. Just wanted to throw that in there in case you had any doubt. Well, ever right now, as in ever 2020.
Yeah.
I ended up really going with my mom and her partner to gay pride parades and clubs, events, bars, so on and so forth. And it was during that time that I really learned to hate Christians because, to me, if you weren't like them, they would not like you. And so I didn't want to have anything to do with Christians. When I was in high school, I went to go attend a Bible study to learn how to disprove it. And I actually became a Christian. And then I had to come out to my three gay parents as Christians, and they kicked me out of the house. They eventually let me back in. I went to Bible college. And later on, at the ages of 69, 70, they were attending the church that I preached at in Dallas, Texas. And both of them gave their lives to Christ.
Wow.
So that's the short version of it.
Yeah. And it is amazing, amazing story. And if you haven't looked at or seen his book, Messy Grace, it's one of those on my list that I have shared with so many people and has helped me personally in a lot of ways. So thanks, Caleb. So let's dive into this conversation and help us get a biblical perspective. Because I think if we get a big picture, we get a starting point, that'll help us build the conversation about same-sex attraction. And so if you could help us clarify, you know, the whole same-sex attraction, gay, is there a difference? Kind of give us a big book, biblical picture and help us define it so we have a good field to start with.
Yeah, so, well, first of all, you know, there's the acronym LGBTQ, mm-hmm. and there are probably at least 15 letters in that acronym right now.
Wow.
We keep on adding letters, and those letters are supposed to represent sexual minorities. So, like, you have lesbian, bisexual, gay, transgender, asexual, intersexual, which intersexual is when somebody, you know, biologically has both male and female reproductive organs to some degree or scope they do. And so it's supposed to represent all these different sexual minorities where people identify or relate. As far as same-sex attraction, you know, a lot of people have asked me, you know, do people choose to be same-sex attracted? I have never met anyone that has chosen to be same-sex attracted. I just haven't, you know, in my experience. I do a lot of speaking for a student ministry called Christ in Youth, CIY, mm-hmm. and I have had a lot of instances where one summer I'll be, you know, speaking on an evening and a student will come out to me, and then the next summer I'd see that same student and they'll say, I'm not gay anymore. And I'm just thinking, wow, it's like a Christmas miracle, because that kind of stuff just doesn't go away, you know, when you really are same-sex attracted. The more, which I'm not quote unquote reformed, but the more reformed camp out there would say that same-sex attraction in and of itself is a sin. They base that off of some of what John Owen said.
Mm-hmm.
I think John Owen is a dead white guy. So I look at the Bible and take a look at what the Bible has to say first and foremost. And first and foremost, I don't see the temptation as a sin whatsoever. Mm-hmm. If it is, Jesus would be guilty of sinning in the desert 40 days and 40 nights. So I don't believe that it is. And it's so funny. Some of my friends who are Reformed will quote John Owen like I'm supposed to bow down and say, oh, well, if John Owen said it, it makes me quote Nicolas Cage to them. Right? You're like, that's random, right? Exactly. It's the same thing. It makes no difference if it's John Owen or Nicolas Cage. What does Scripture say?
Mm.
And Scripture tells us that temptation is not a sin.
Right.
It is not a sin. You know, if you're opposite sex attracted or same sex attracted, the sin takes place when we start imagining things in our head, imagining scenarios, or we make decisions to act out on those sins. So, that's where that sin is. And, it leaves us in quite a quandary, right? Because what should people who want to follow Jesus well and are same-sex attracted, what should they do? Their options are limited, right? They're to get into a same-sex relationship, to get into an opposite-sex relationship, or what we would call a mixed orientation relationship, and those usually blow up real quick. There's some that really do work, because emotional feelings have translated into physical feelings, and they really are in love. It's not that they aren't same-sex attracted, but they have fallen in love with somebody of the opposite sex. Or the third option is celibacy. And unfortunately, the way that Christians have idolized marriage to the point where it excludes people who are single or are celibate, it's made them feel like they're the redheaded stepchild if they choose celibacy. And we look at sex as the coup de grace of intimacy when it's not. I mean, it's so funny. We spend all of our time talking about sex and marriage, and Jesus said neither one's going to be in heaven. You know, but agape, strage, leo will be in heaven. So that's a quick rundown.
Wow. Man. thank you, because I think that was a very solid place to start with. And so I think, you know, we've seen a lot of attention, especially nowadays, and one of the references that we talked off the air about was this idea of the Babysitters Club. And we're seeing a lot more, what I'm going to call, and some people aren't going to like this term, but I'm going to say it, it's targeting our children and exposing them to the LGBTQ plus, I guess is how you say it now. I can't even keep up with it. So when you started saying all that, I had no idea it had gone that far out. So now I really know what the plus means. But it feels like they're pushing an agenda to expose more and more younger children, and it's getting younger and younger. How concerning is that to you, and what are some of your thoughts about seeing that now?
It's very concerning, especially when you see, when you look at what happened, what's happening in the United Kingdom with some of their laws and what they're doing with the whole, for lack of a better phrase, trans movement over there. It's extremely concerning to me. And let me draw a distinction here, if it's fair. Mm-hmm. When I say it's extremely concerning to me, in no way, shape, or form, I'm not saying that people who experience gender dysphoria or people who are trans, I'm not saying they are disturbing to me. I'm saying yes. That the political movement, mm-hmm. you know, of trans activism yes. is very disturbing to me. So right. I want to draw a differentiation there.
That's good. That's good.
That's fair to do. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about this, I'm talking about this trans activist movement, because the truth is that I know a lot of people who are gay or lesbian, a lot of people who are in same-sex relationships, and they are even bothered by the whole trans mm-hmm. activist movement. A lot of people think that all these individuals in the same, you know, in the acronym, a lot of people think that they all get along, you know, and they really don't. I'm not necessarily suggesting anybody should watch this, but if one were to watch Dave Chappelle's latest stand-up called Sticks and Stones, he has a whole section in there where he talks about the alphabet people. And he calls them the alphabet people, and he talks about how he really actually does, you know, he supports gay rights and so on and so forth, but he says, you know, it's kind of weird some of the times when all of them can't even get along within the acronym. And he makes a point of saying that. And so I think that anytime we try to politicize leverage human fallenness for political gains, I think that's troublesome. Because, I mean, the fact of the matter is everybody is sexually broken. And the fact of the matter is that the trans movement is extremely dangerous. And I'll tell you why obviously there are huge biblical issues, but let me tell you why I think it's extremely dangerous besides that.
Yes.
And then I'll shut up. The UCLA Anderson School of Management back in, I think it was 2015 or so, they did a study of people who experienced gender dysphoria, people who had transitioned and tried to resolve that dysphoria either by taking hormones or by taking hormones and having the gender reassignment surgery. And they found, and I can send you this article, I mean, this whole study, it's there. They found that the attempted suicide rate of people who transitioned and had the gender reassignment surgery was close to 50%.
Wow.
The attempted suicide rate of people that had the surgery was close to 50%. That bothers me.
Yeah, that's scary.
You never hear about any of that in mm-hmm. anything whatsoever.
Right.
And yeah. If I were in a profession where almost half the people, half my clients are trying to kill themselves, I would like to think that I would quit. Except the reason why they don't is because think about all the money people are making. Pharmaceutical companies with the hormones, plastic surgeons, counselors, so on and so forth. We never talk about the suicidality. And then people, you know, try to blame it on churches. They try to blame it on religion. They try to blame it on society.
Right.
When the study that UCLA did also shows that people who are involved in religious communities actually have less of a suicide rate. So anyway,
Wow.
So, Tom, you're asking questions about an agenda with being pushed toward younger kids. I'd like to find out, Caleb, your opinion. How do you suggest a parent handle this conversation with their kids? Give you a little bit of backstory. My daughter's 15 and we've homeschooled. So when she was younger, because she was not exposed to any of this outside of our home, we chose to avoid those programs in our house. As she's gotten older and more friends, she's becoming more exposed to that. So in our house, we've taken the stand that we still watch the programs with the LGBTQ themes, you know, characters, people, but we use that as discussion points in our house. Talking to a parent, what would your suggestion be on how to approach the subject with their own kids?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I would say you're doing the right thing there. You can't hide your kids from reality. Okay. We can't. Henry Cloud's definition of integrity in his book, Integrity, is the ability to meet the demands of reality. And so to me, part of reality is actually meeting those demands and meeting reality head on. Too many people try to bury their head in the sand and act like reality, like this isn't reality. They're living some kind of alternate reality. So you can't do that, because unless, if you try to shield your kids from reality, they're eventually going to go out there and experience reality, and the interaction is not going to be good. One way or another, it's not going to be good. So that's the first thing. I just want to affirm what you're saying there. And I think that's the right perspective. Second thing I'll say is this, that we used to talk about the talk about the birds and the bees, you know, talk. Two things with that. One, it should not be the talk. It should be the talks, plural.
Yes.
Okay. Talks about sex and sexual intimacy should be an ongoing conversation. And I started having conversations about that when my kids were very young. Because I knew that they would hear about Messy Grace. I knew that they would hear about Grandma and Grandpa and so on and so forth. And so we have to keep on having these conversations with our kids. And the depth of those conversations is dependent on what phase of life they're in, how old they are, what they've seen, what they've experienced, so on and so forth. The third thing I'll say about is it's not just to talk about sex anymore. It's to talk about sex and sexuality. We need to explain to our kids how some people view sexuality. We need to explain to them what the Bible says about sexuality, what the Bible says about, their sex, their gender. Are there social constructs for it? Yeah, there are social constructs in any society, but every society still has common traits and common quote-unquote constructs, for lack of a better word, the male gender and the female gender. But we need to explain to our kids not only what the Bible says about that gender and sexuality and so on and so forth, we also need to explain to them what the Bible says about or what culture is doing about it, how society is expressing itself. Basically, what I try to get my kids to understand is that if you base your worldview on what culture and society says, you will always be changing your worldview, because society and culture is always changing. It is never the same, because people are always changing, because people are crazy. I was telling my kids the other day, if you don't believe Daddy, just let me show you Facebook. You'll see real quick that people are insane. And so we have to teach them that what society says, but that even though we are to engage society, we cannot base our worldview on society. And then the fourth thing I would say, and I try to help my kids understand, is there is never a reason to devalue another human being. Mm-hmm. There is never a reason to treat somebody with less dignity. Now, somebody may view themselves as the sex or the gender that they were not as. I tell my kids, I'm like, okay, that is their reality. You don't have to agree with it, but you don't disrespect it. Okay. You don't have to sign off on it, but you don't make that person feel less than. It is not your job to go in and to create that reality, to correct that reality. It is your job to build a loving relationship with them so that you can point them to Jesus Christ, to the one who is the great healer that can change any reality. And you know what? I honestly believe with all of my heart that there are people that experience gender dysphoria. I believe it's a real thing. I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. They're like, you know, but you know, you believe it's possible. Why would I not? I mean, has our world not been broken in every aspect and every meaning of the word? And by the way, as I said before, everybody is sexually broken, every single person. And so, yeah, I totally, you know, believe that that's possible. And there are, and I have friends who experience gender dysphoria. As far as what the DSM, you know, the counseling book, the disorder book, as far as what the DSM says, gender dysphoria, how they define it. And there are a lot of them that will never take hormones, and they will never do, they will never get the gender reassignment surgery, but they try to stabilize their emotions and how they deal with it through prayer, you know, through having people in their life that they're honest with. I have one friend, and I'm not going to, you know, I didn't ask any appropriate questions. You'll see why I'm saying this in a second, of my friend. My friend just volunteered this information. She experiences gender dysphoria. She wears male boxer briefs, and that really helps her, you know? And she's like, is that bad? And I'm like, I don't think so. But my whole point with that is that you have somebody who is trying to, I think, in a good, in a better way than any kind of reassignment surgery, is trying to handle that dysphoria she feels, right? And it's not destructive. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does. It totally makes sense. And what I'm seeing is, I feel like a lot of leaders in children's and student ministries really struggle with that, because they're just not sure how to appropriately respond. And I think, you know, well, like Ron has said, and I think we were talking more off air about this idea that, you know, there are churches out there that are afraid to speak on this subject because they're afraid to offend. And there's church leaders that they go to a step further, and they just totally avoid the subject, but then they actually affirm the LGBTQ lifestyle. So I think this would be a good place to ask this question now is, you know, in the book you talk about, and I've heard you talk about this too, and you just mentioned it, the idea of what's the difference between accepting and affirming? Because I think this is where there's so much of this nowadays. It feels like in our culture, you know, with the race issue and this issue, that if you don't say, you know, hard line, you're this or that, you're going to get canceled. And so can you help us out with that? What's that difference between accepting and affirming, and how does a church speak about that and address it?
Yeah. So accepting is all about, I think, loving somebody no matter who they are, no matter what they're doing, you love them. It's accepting is putting Matthew 5, 38 through 48 into motion. You have heard that it was said, hate your enemies. I tell you, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. I think that accepting is neither the rejection of someone, nor is it the agreement with their ideas and decisions and views. Accepting is just loving them for who they are. It's kind of the same attitude in the same vein of Romans 5:8. While we were still sinners, Christ loved us. And so we love people where they're at. You know, you can't walk a mile in somebody's shoes, but you can walk miles next to somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about. Brene Brown, often defines empathy as the ability to feel with another person. And so I think you could make the argument that God is the most empathetic being ever. And so this is walking with someone. Yeah. Agreement, approval, affirmation is co-signing or signing off on somebody's life decisions, relational decisions, views, beliefs, politics, whatever you want to call it. We are not commanded to agree with everybody. We are commanded to accept everyone. That true love, real love, is built on acceptance. Cheap love comes from agreement. And so,
wow, that's good.
You know, when I think about the people that I, you know, am in relationship with, there are a lot of them that do things that I don't agree with, but that doesn't mean that I stop loving them, because my love for them doesn't depend on my theology of marriage, my theology of sexuality, or anything else. My love for them depends on my love for them, period. Mm. So that's the first thing, you know, that I would say there. The second thing I would say is that how do pastors, how do church leaders, how do even volunteers talk about this? Well, I think it's lived out more than talked. I mean, yes, we can definitely talk about it, and we should talk about it. But I think it's more of living it out. It's more in how we treat people. It's more in how we are postured towards people and how we approach people. To me, that is how we really get people to understand where we are. You know, and obviously pastors, and I think Christian leaders and student ministry workers and kidmen workers, they definitely need to be talked about this, and they need to be talking about loving people no matter what, love your neighbor. They need to be talking about how do we treat people with kindness. You know, again, say all the things that Jesus said. But I think there's an aspect in this where if we truly want to have a church or a kidmen or a student ministry that is a place of acceptance, not 100% agreement, but a place of acceptance, we have to keep on asking ourselves, who's going to come and are we ready for them? Let me give you a quick story. You said that I founded the Messy Grace Group, and you know, this is where I help churches develop systems and processes at every age level that allow LGBTQ people to belong without the church compromising their theological convictions or values or anything like that. And I've worked with churches as large as 40,000 to churches as large as 20. And this one church I was working with, we had a little bit of an issue where we had to solve it pretty quickly. So it's a larger church in Southern California. I won't say which one, but they had a weekend retreat for their student ministry. And the student ministry pastor said, hey, invite all your friends, bring new people. So they had a busload of people. It was a long weekend. They went up to the mountains in Southern California. It was snowing and everything. They get up there having a first good night. And then right before they dismissed everybody to their cabins, they found out that one of the new students who came is transgender. They found out that, you know, this boy was biologically born a girl. And so they are kind of like, oh, you know, okay, so this student was in the boys' cabin. We need to put the student in the girls' cabin. And, you know, the horrible idea. And when I say that, it's horrible because of the impact that it would have on the student who is trans. And the student started crying and getting upset. The student called the mom, or her mom. And the mom got on the phone and said, if you put my child in the girls' cabin, I will sue you. Whoa. And in the state of California, she would have won big time. And so they had to decide what to do on the fly. And so they had to, you know, put the student with a couple of female leaders in a leader cabin. And, you know, both, they couldn't be one-on-one with the student. One, you know, they both would be in there with the student. But they came back. And again, this student was unchurched. This student was an unbeliever. This student's mom didn't go to church, single parent family. And I don't know if they went back to church after that. But I was there that next week, and we had to talk about, number one, how do we communicate how students will be assimilated overnight into cabins and that kind of thing on retreats. How do we communicate that up front? And the other thing that we had to do is, if there is that situation again, what's the best scenario? Because let's just say you put this student into like a girl's dormitory, into a girl's cabin, and the student looks like a boy. This student is all of a sudden going to be made fun of, going to be made to feel less than. It's not a good thing. And I've had this happen time and time again, especially in California and other places like Oregon and Colorado and so on, where you will have transgender students go to like a Wednesday night where they're having small groups. And it's kind of like, do we put them in the guys group? Do we put them in the girls group? You know? And so ministry leaders have to be having these conversations on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. If you are not having these conversations on a regular basis, you will not be prepared for what happens. And the purpose of the conversation, by the way, is not to develop a whole lot of guidelines or rules or that kind of a thing. The purpose of the conversation, number one, is to develop empathy. But number two, the purpose of the conversation is to keep your mind sharpened so that when these issues do arise, you'll have better answers. You'll be able to have a better posture. You'll be able to approach it in better ways than if you're not having the conversation. It's kind of like with all the race stuff that's going on right now. Mm-hmm. You can really tell the difference between somebody who's talking and who has been having these conversations versus somebody who just started having these conversations and they feel like they just need to start talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
So if we want to be accepting, then we need to start having these conversations as leaders as a regular basis. Now, I'm not saying that we sit down and talk about gender dysphoria every single week. I mean, that would be weird. But conversations about sexuality and sex and sexual minorities and marriage and relationships and intimacy, how that relates with students, how that relates with parents. There's a huge umbrella that we can really continue talking about, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not just one item. It's many. And if we don't have these conversations on a regular basis, we're going to be far behind because culture has been having these conversations for a long time. And Paul, if there's ever anybody that would have had these conversations on a regular basis, it would have been Paul, would have been the one who said, I've become all things to all people. Right. It was the guy that knew enough about culture to engage the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers.
Yeah, right. I mean, he went into the middle of that. Wow, that's going to be a great spot. I think we're gonna start wrapping up in this, and definitely we'll be doing a part two here. So as we wrap up, Caleb, because I think that's a great point, and in the next episode, we want to talk to you about how do we communicate and how do we talk to people and how do we handle some of these situations that inevitably we're going to experience more of in the coming days. But I'm just wondering, are there some resources? I mean, obviously, I want people to go to Messy Grace Group, and we'll put that link in the show notes. And links to your books and all that so that people can connect up, and because you have church courses and stuff. And so take a minute and talk about that too. Give us a bigger picture of what Messy Grace Group does, but are there some resources or authors that you would recommend that come from a good, solid biblical viewpoint on these issues that leaders and parents can dig into to inform themselves so that they can have better and more intelligent conversations and biblically based conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of different authors out there and people that I really appreciate. One is Dr. Mark Yarhouse. Dr. Mark Yarhouse is head of the psychology department at Wheaton College up in Chicago. And he has written, I think, the best book on gender dysphoria. It should be on the shelf of every Christian leader out there and probably every parent. It's called Understanding Gender Dysphoria. And he is the best that I've seen that really approaches this from with Orthodox theology, but has a very empathetic posture. Mm. You know, he actually has a new book that I endorsed that's releasing soon on gender dysphoria. He wrote it with a another Christian psychologist name, a friend of mine named Dr. Julia Sandusky. And so the two of them wrote this book. You know, it's some further thoughts, updated thoughts on gender dysphoria, and especially, you know, students and college students and young adults and gender dysphoria. So I would definitely recommend picking up anything that Dr. Mark Yarhouse has to say. Then there are other people that have written fantastic, you know, books that would be of help, like Beckett Cook has a book called Change of Affection. And he's a good friend of mine who lives out in West Hollywood, used to work in the fashion industry, designing sets and that kind of thing, became a Christian. And Francis Chan actually paid for his whole seminary education.
Wow.
He went to Talbot School of Theology, and Beckett is just a sharp dude. His book has really taken off. I'd recommend that. Jackie Hill Perry, Gay Girl, Good God. She's a hip hop artist, does a lot of spoken word. I'd recommend her book. Sam Alberry has written a lot of stuff. He actually, he wrote a great book called Is God Anti-Gay? He just wrote two really good books that came out recently. One is called Seven Myths About Singleness, where he really addresses celibacy. The other one, this latest one, I love the title. You ever seen one of those titles where it's kind of like, dang it, why didn't I think about that? But anyway, the title of his latest book is Why Does God Care Who I Sleep With?
Ooh.
You know, which that's just a fantastic, fantastic book. So, you know, plus he's British and he's a Star Wars fan, so he says he could work on the Death Star.
That's awesome.
Yeah, those are some of the books that I would really recommend. As far as if you go to messygracegroup.org, you'll see different resources on there. We're going to be adding some more. We have some online courses that are going to be coming up soon that we're going to be publishing on there. But you have the Messy Grace video curriculum on there that actually you can watch the whole thing on YouTube now or on Right Now Media or that kind of thing. So if you go to messygracegroup.org, that's my ministry website, or CalebKaltenbach.com is my personal one. But yeah, thanks for inviting me, guys.
Hey, thank you so much. And I'm already looking forward to the next conversation because I know it's going to be so helpful, especially we dig into more of the practical stuff of things that we need to be aware of. So Caleb, thanks for making time for us. I appreciate that very, very much.
Yeah, we appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, it's been powerful, and I know it's gonna help a lot of folks that listen to this, and hopefully we'll share it out even more. So, hey, guys, thanks for listening to this edition of the Kid Ministry Collective podcast, and we appreciate your support and encouragement. Continue to share out the podcast, let people know, and obviously join us again for the next edition as we go into part two of Messy Grace and the good conversations that we need to be having. So thanks again for listening, and join us again real soon.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. We hope that it's helped and encouraged you. If you would, support our podcast by continuing to share it with other leaders. And if you haven't already, hey, please subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. We look forward to hearing from you how this podcast has helped and sharpened your skills in ministries. So let us know on your Facebook page or head over to kmccoach.net and share with us there. And thanks again for listening to the Kid Ministry Collective podcast.